Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. We are back. You've got me, Elijah Evans, joined today by Adrian White, who has been crushing it for Future Sox on the social media and written side lately. Wanted to bring in Adrian to talk a little bit about everything going on in the White Sox world. As we sit here today, December 29th, past Christmas, happy holidays to everybody as we approach New Year's and start to turn the page over to 2026. It's an exciting time for the White Sox. I think the White Sox community is feeling pretty fired up right now. More Munetaka Murakami signs last week, obviously the huge news from the White Sox world, followed by Sean Newcomb as well. We're going to talk about both those signings today, in addition to how those signings shape the infield and the pitching staff for the White Sox heading into this new year. It's a really exciting time. We're looking forward to diving into 2026. This is going to be our final episode of 2025, which is pretty crazy. It's been an awesome year. We've seen a lot of growth across the board. We really appreciate everybody who has tuned in to Future Sox throughout this year. We can't wait for what's to come next year because we've got a lot more in the tank on the way. Adrian, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on the show. It's been an awesome last couple weeks for the White Sox, for sure. It's the number one pick, Murakami, and that kind of stuff. Just definitely... a nice, exciting couple weeks and more to come, hopefully, in 2026.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it, man. I think that we're in a good spot. I think we've talked about it a lot off air. I mean, the White Sox are clearly heading in a direction that people are encouraged by. I think the Murakami signing represents a lot more than just the player of Munetaka Murakami. Obviously, we're excited to see what that player is going to look like, a guy who's had historic power numbers in Japan, see how it translates over to Major League Baseball. The flip side of that is just what it signals for the organization. I think that this was a scenario where the market sort of collapsed in Murakami. I think that's what most people, if you look at the situation, right, this was a guy who was projected $150 million coming into the offseason, probably by most people, looked at as a top tier addition on the offensive side, a high risk, high reward type of player. The risk ultimately was too much for a lot of the contending teams to want to take on, particularly when you look at the fact that there is still the big four free agent hitters left on the market. I think most contenders were too hesitant with the window of Murakami being deadline to sign by the 23rd. And then you factor that in with all the guys that were still available. It just became too much of a risk for most teams to take on. The market starts to crash. The White Sox, yeah, you could say it fell in their lap, but they also capitalized on a market for a guy that was weakened and a player that there is a ton of risk, but he could be a stud. And the White Sox have the option for 2 years to just see how it looks and to give him a platform. And beyond that, just create a new level of fandom for the White Sox. The amount of fluctuating to social media, from Japanese fans has been incredible to watch in the past few weeks. I know you've experienced it. I've experienced it. Future Sox has experienced it. It's really cool to see the amount of people that are now being brought into the White Sox world because of one signing.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. Just purely off just the Japanese market that's going to be involved now in the White Sox, I think it's huge. I think that was really honestly probably a selling point to Jerry Reinsdorf and just to the whole organization. You see like how much money the Dodgers bring in on a year-to-year basis, like how much more money they're bringing in everybody. That's because they have this Japanese market. It's because, you know, all these other teams are bringing in these Japanese players. If you can try to get in another cash flow and if it hits for you, you're going to become really popular. You know what I mean? And I think it's a really good move and a calculated risk that you know, White Sox needed to take. I don't think it really fell into the lap either, like you were saying. I think it was very calculated. I think they checked in early. They scouted him. I mean, there was rumors all the way back a couple months ago that they were looking at – they were at the Japanese All-Star game and that kind of stuff. And I think they waited and they saw the market developed, and I think they struck when they realized that they could pay the deal. I think it's a really calculated risk for the White Sox.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I think that's a good way to look at it. I think it is a risk, right? Like, I want people to understand that. And I think that it's the excitement is there. And I want, you know, people should be excited. You should be fired up about the signing and the fact that the White Sox brought in a guy who was viewed as one of the premier free agents heading into the offseason. And yes, the market fell apart a little bit. That doesn't mean this isn't still a really exciting ad. The flip side of that, like, there's a lot of risk here. So I want to go through just, you know, off the top here, a little bit of some numbers just to give people further context just on who Munetaka Murakami is, you know, in Japan. And that league in the NPB, kind of what he looks like as a player. Obviously, you've heard about the power. The first thing he said in an interview with Chuck Garfine was, "I have power," and that was awesome, and everybody's fired up, and I love to see it. This is a guy who broke records as a 22-year-old back in 2022. He was already, you know, a high-end player, high-level prospect. He debuted in Nippon Professional Baseball briefly in 2018, mostly played in the minor leagues in Japan that season. 2019 as a 19-year-old, his rookie season, he had 36 homers and an 814 OPS over in Japan as a 19-year-old in the professional league, right? That's not something you're seeing particularly often. It's not something that is, even for a league that, you know, especially a league that is pitcher heavy, right? You don't see that level of power production in Japan for most players, right? You've seen it from some guys over the past few years. Of course, Shohei Ohtani was a guy you look back at and you say, okay, Ohtani was mashing at that level throughout his career. Murakami comes in at 36 homers his rookie year, followed by 28 and then 39, his first three seasons. Those second and third seasons, OPS of 1012 and 974. So this is a guy that by his second year at 20 years old was putting up an OPS of over 1,000 in Nippon Professional Baseball. 2022 comes along, 22 years old. He has maybe one of the best hitting seasons in Japanese baseball history. Unbelievable year, 56 home runs, 118 walks to 128 strikeouts. So the strikeout rate was, you know, really manageable at that point, honestly. 141 games that season, only 128 strikeouts. You look at an on-base percentage that season of 458, slug of 710. I mean, it was the single season for a Japanese-born player, single season home run record that year. So this was where, like, in 2022, heading into the World Baseball Classic at the beginning of 2023, like, this guy was looked at as one of the best baseball players on the planet, right? A 22-year-old who just put up 56 home runs and got on base at a 450 clip. That was when this talk of, like, okay, this guy could be the next, you know, $300 million Japanese player. Like, that was when all of that sparked, right? So I think from that point on, the perception, especially after the World Baseball Classic and because of the World Baseball Classic, the perception in, you know, MLB media has largely been, this guy is a superstar since then. But on the flip side, there has been some noticeable decline in issues over the past couple of years, right? You look at 2023, 2024, the numbers tick down, still very strong, but 31 homers, 33 homers, OPS in the mid 800s, both of those seasons. Strikeout rate rises significantly, goes from 128 strikeouts in his MVP season in 2022, 168 strikeouts in 23, 180 strikeouts in 2024. Walk rate goes down, strikeout rate goes up, home runs came down for 2 years in a row. 2025, missed a ton of games with injuries, only played 56 games in NPB this past season. And, you know, the home runs, 24 homers in 56 games, or 22 homers in 56 games. So he still mashed, of course. But strikeout rate, more than one strikeout per game, walk rate a little bit down, right? There is some reason to be concerned with the past three seasons since that MVP year. Sorry for the long ramble there, but a little bit of a dialogue there.
Absolutely. I think you hit all the points. I think something really interesting too, like you mentioned, the sit down with Chuck Garfine, the viral clip was, "I have power." Well, then also right after that, he goes, "I will strike out." Like, he's just very honest with himself. Like, he just said, like, "I will strike out." I think something really interesting too, just looking at the this past year's numbers, he hit 22 home runs, but if you space that out to how many games he would have played over a full season, he was still on pace for 56 home runs to tie that record that he had. So he essentially hit 22 home runs in 2 months, 3 months of play. So that power was still there. And I think maybe that oblique injury bothered the strikeout rate. Like, I know the strikeout rate kept climbing year over year, but that could have definitely affected it. I definitely think that, especially the swing and miss concerns are definitely there, but he definitely walks some too. And I think that's important as well, especially for the three true outcome kind of thing. He controls his zone well, and I think he gets deep in accounts. I think if Ryan Fuller and Derek Stroman can kind of try to adjust his approach maybe earlier in the count and try to select the pitches, I think his transition will be a little bit easier.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I wanted to give some context there as to why this market has fallen from where it was even a year or two ago, right? I think this offseason, it was easy to look at, oh, this guy's some, you know, this prestigious power hitter coming from Japan who's only 25 years old. And while that is completely true, there is a decline for 3 years now of a guy who hasn't reached even near that peak, whether it be from injury this past season or just from lower production in 2023 and 2024. There is reason when you look at it to understand why the market fell for him and why he ended up coming to Chicago on a 2-year, $34 million deal, which was nowhere near any of the projections for him. And I can see and I understand some of the reason why teams were concerned and were scared of, you know, committing 5 or 6 years to this guy. The other part of the market aspect of it, right? When it became clear he wasn't going to get that, you know, 20 plus AAV for 5+ years type of deal that was initially projected. From Murakami's standpoint and his representation, right? At that point, you'd almost rather, instead of taking a 5-year deal for only 15, 20 million AAV, right? You'd almost rather cut it down, take that 2-year deal, right? For the same AAV. He hits the market again at 27 years old. Like, he's going to have a chance in 2 years from now. If he comes to Chicago and he rakes and he is everything that, you know, he could be, as he reaches his highest potential with the White Sox in Major League Baseball, he's going to hit the market again as a 27-year-old power-hitting superstar, potentially, if everything goes well for him. So I get it from the perspective of Murakami, where once you knew you weren't getting that significant high AAV and long-term deal, you pivot to a short-term deal where you can prove yourself at the major league level, hit the market again in the prime of your career.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it's a very smart move on both sides. I think it's, I keep using the word calculated. I think it's calculated on both sides. I think that we don't know what the other offers looked like, of course. We don't know if he had the 5 years or what, maybe even a higher AAV, maybe a lower AAV for way longer. But I just think that this was the right opportunity for him. And I think that he could have taken maybe a more of a contender deal with more years, but that also pigeonholes yourself. If stuff doesn't work out, you're lower in the order. I think here you have more opportunity to elevate some of those stats. You get more of a focused look on yourself. I think that he can be kind of our star guy too. I think he wanted to do that. He was a star in Japan. I think he wants to do that here.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think he's going to have the opportunity to be in the heart of the lineup. You figure he's going to hit 4 or 5 for the White Sox every day. And, you know, he's going to play first base, right? So we heard immediately after the signing that the expectation is he will play first, right? So that gives some perspective on what the White Sox infield is going to look like. I think, you know, you and I had talked about it winter meetings and we'd heard from, you know, from White Sox staff there and everything. First base has been a commonly asked question throughout this offseason about where does the team go with first base? Is it Miguel Vargas or are they going to find someone? You got your first baseman and you got a higher upside first baseman than any of us were expecting the team to sign, frankly, right? Like we were talking about, you know, Ryan O'Hearn as the highest possibility outcome, and Ryan O'Hearn signed a quality deal with Pittsburgh. You know, he's probably a little bit of a safer player, but for just $5 million more than Ryan O'Hearn, you got a guy who has the upside of a superstar power hitter. Yeah, there's a lot more volatility there. That's the type of risk the White Sox can and should be taking right now.
No, yeah, 100%. I think the fielding is definitely going to be interesting. I think they're going to play him at first base as much as possible, just because I think DH and kind of those corner infield spot, yeah, right-handed, it's going to be really interesting to see how that all shakes out. But yeah, like I definitely think that, I mean, he said it himself that he wants to improve at first base. He said that along with the strikeouts that he's looking to improve there and that he wants to. I think it's going to be a lot of first base and DH time. I don't think that he's going to touch third base, to be honest with you. I don't think that's really a possibility. But if he can pick the ball at first, and honestly, you can't be much worse than what we had at first base last year, fielding wise, altogether. Yeah. So if as long as he can be better than that, I think it's honestly a win.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think it's going to be really interesting. I mean, again, there is a wide range of outcomes here, but I am thrilled, and I think most people are thrilled with the signing, because not only does it represent a risk you should be taking, but it also just represents where this organization is at, I think. I think it showcases the fact that we're in a new era of White Sox baseball, and we're in a time where this team is ready to take a step forward. And to take that step forward, this year and next year even, you're going to take some risks, and you're going to have to take some risks, and you're going to see how they play out, and then you can go from there. And if this is a guy who really struggles, he's off the books by the time you're in your real contention window come 2028. If he thrives, you have the ability to either look at an extension for him, try and continue to make him a guy that sticks around for longer, or you have the ability to, you know, keep him in a, as a trade chip potentially in 2027, right? At the end of the season, if he has an incredible year and you realize, I know fans would hate this, of course, and I don't want to put this out there, but like if he is so good that you realize you're probably not going to be able to extend him, you have the option of an elite trade chip for 1 year to really give a whole other layer to this rebuild. Or if he's good enough where you want to keep him around, but he's not so valuable that, you know, he proves to be a superstar, you look into extensions, you look into options to keep him around and can make him the first baseman of the future for the White Sox, because there isn't anybody knocking on the door at first base. We've talked about this before. Like there is not anybody in the system that you look at as the future first baseman. So if Murakami proves that that's him, you got a guy on a discounted deal who was one of the greatest hitters in, you know, NPB history, right?
No, 100%. I think with this front office too, and you're talking about the shape of this front office and what they're trying to do, I think that they're trying to maximize and multiply as many assets as they can. And whether that's it works out and they're extending him or they're trading him, I think that they're going to do whatever works out in that way to either whatever avenue that is, to try to maximize and multiply that, whether it is he stays and it works out or he goes. And like something I wrote at the end of the Murakami article was like, I just think this front office gives a much better feeling of just like the overall trajectory of what you're going into. Like nobody thought that you could get the Scarecrow Shea return that you did, to the point where people are asking, or Boston's asking back for Kyle Teal. You landed in Murakami. You're back in the Asian market. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Carlos Rodriguez yet signing over. That's a huge front office move. They've maximized on bonus pool space with Grant Taylor and Caleb Bonimer. They've turned a Rule 5 pick Shane Smith into an all-star. I just think they've done so many things that show so much positivity in where this direction of the organization is going. Like nobody would have thought, if you would have said this a year ago, Murakami signing. I think we all would have thought we were joking. I think, you know, he has highlights on Twitter and you put hashtag White Sox on there as a joke. And you're like, oh, you know, you would hope. And now it's, you know, it's here. You have the number one pick. I think things are really looking up.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. If you haven't gotten a chance yet, everyone should definitely go on futuresox.net and check out Adrian's recent write-up on Murakami. Really good perspective on just the overall situation, the market, the player, all of the above. Adrian's been putting out great stuff on futuresox.net, so make sure you're checking that out as well. Looking at how this shapes the infield is the next thing I want to do here, because this gives a lot of clarity. I think coming into this offseason, it was like, okay, there's all these pieces and how are they actually going to come together and form an infield? As we sit here today, it seems pretty certain that the opening day infield is going to be Murakami at first, Chase Meidroff at second, Colson Montgomery at short, and Miguel Vargas at third. That one signing did provide a lot of clarity, because originally it was, is Vargas playing first? Is Vargas playing third? Is Lenin Sosa playing first? Is Lenin Sosa playing second? Like there was a lot of options there, and there still is some things that need to be figured out. But it does seem to me, and I want to hear if you agree with me, that that four is going to be the opening day infield, and we'll see from there.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I don't think Lenin Sosa necessarily has a position outside of maybe playing first base. I think his days at second base or third base are probably done. There's guys like Curtis Meade maybe who can come up and maybe play at third, but I think a guy like Miguel Vargas probably has that spot over him at this point. So there's not a lot of infield guys that you would think would come up from the system that would start over the guys that you would have. So, yeah, I would definitely think so. I mean, Colson Montgomery proved that he can play a good enough shortstop to stay there. Chase Meidroff looked like he was more comfortable at second. I mean, I think that – I don't think Sam Antonacci would necessarily be up an opening day. But, I mean, I love the idea of that, to be honest with you. I've always loved the idea of platooning Sam Antonacci and Chase Meidroff and just seeing what you can do with that. That's probably the only other – infield option, maybe like a William Brigola or something like that. Like we're just talking prospects, but yeah, no, I think that's how the infield probably shakes out. Especially when you have a guy that you want to stick at first base, and they said repeatedly that they want to stick him at first base. I think that really the main outcome is having Murakami at first, Chase Meidroff at second, Colson at short, and then Miguel Vargas at third.
Yeah, I'm with you there for sure. I think that that does seem like the infield, at least starting the season. You hit on Antonacci. Obviously, people that listen to this show have heard me talk about him a million times. I think Antonacci will have a real shot to get innings. I actually think there's a chance Antonacci ends up playing a little bit of second and a little bit of third. I wouldn't be surprised to see him have 1 or 2 days a week behind Vargas at third. He did play third throughout college, so as much as he's played second mostly in his pro career, he has experience at third. I think he can be an option at third. I think he can definitely start to take away some time from Meidroff at second. Then you factor in Curtis Meade and Lenin Sosa. this is where it gets interesting for me. And I think this is kind of one of the last steps in the offseason process here. I've definitely heard a couple things about the possibility of Lenin Sosa and or Curtis Mead being on the trade market. I would not be surprised at all to see one of those two get moved here in the next month or so. I think Sosa above all, like, I don't think Mead carries as much value right now, right? The White Sox just traded for him last year. He hasn't proven to be a big league caliber hitter. He really hasn't had the innings to do so, but regardless, like, Sosa got run last year, hit 22 homers. He doesn't walk at all. So that's, you know, the downside, right? There's definitely some deficiencies. He's somewhat positionless, right? So there's not going to be a crazy market for Lenin Sosa. With that said, I think someone would definitely pay for a platoon DH first base guy who could play, you know, he can start every game against lefties, play one or two games a week against righties. You've got a guy who could start 3 to 4 days a week, split between first base and DH for teams that just need an influx of some juice and need an influx in their lineup of just a you know, a guy who can just plug and play in different situations and mash lefties particularly. I think there's a market there for at least, you know, a solid prospect return for Sosa, who really just doesn't have a spot on this roster. Like, I just have a hard time seeing how Sosa gets innings. And maybe it's just, yeah, it's one day a week for Murakami at first. It's one day a week at second, maybe for Meidroth. It's 2 days a week DHing when Caro or Teal or Benintendi are not DHing. You've already got three guys in the DH mix there, sort of. I just think Sosa is the guy that is a pretty clear trade candidate. Unfortunately, other teams know that as well, obviously. So you're in a situation where you've got a guy with nothing really to do with him, but still some value, and that could definitely bring down the market for Sosa.
I think that if you can find a guy who's in a similar spot, at least on the pitching side, because I know we'll talk about Luis Robert Jr. a little bit later, they were looking at maybe some pitching help on that side and a Red Seal or something like that. I think that if you can get somebody in a similar spot, with a fringy five starter, swingman kind of guy who's looking, who had a good sort of year, but not all the way there, maybe a little bit of elevated ERA. If you can get one of those kind of guys for a Sosa, maybe straight up, like, I don't know what a team looks like, what exactly a player, but I feel like that's be something they would target. Because like you were saying, I think Benintendi probably gets most of these DH at bats when they're not filtering the catchers in and out. Because I don't think that Benintendi is going to play a lot of time in left field. I mean, I hope they sign an outfielder. That's a different discussion for a different day. But yeah, I definitely think that if they can find somebody in a similar realm as Sosa on the pitching side, I think that would be a good fit.
Yeah, no, I could see that for sure. I also could just see it as a prospect, like take a swing and an upside, you know, single A guy who you just think can be something. I think there's teams out there that would be willing to part with a, you know, a flyer top 25 in the system type of guy, 20 to 30 in the farm system ranking type of guy who like has upside. The White Sox think can be a little bit more than his current pedigree, but fits the mold and that type of trade. I agree with you. I think it's one of the two. It's probably either that swingman bullpen depth guy, or it's a just super low level flyer prospect who you look at as the White Sox and you identify a guy in X organization and you say, okay, we like the upside of this type of player. We're going to take a swing on him. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's right. It's a swingman depth arm and it's a rookie ball, you know, prospect, right? Yeah. That could be a package for Sosa that, yeah, it doesn't look sexy. It's not going to look like some great, huge package like prospect return. At the same time, I think if you can get a big league depth piece and a prospect flyer for a guy that doesn't fit on your roster, you feel pretty good about that probably.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. They've been going after a lot of, at least in my opinion, a lot of Mike Tauchman lights, a lot of younger version of Mike Tauchman's with Tristan Peters and Dustin Harris and like those kind of minor league signing guys. Like, I think if they can find maybe like an established version of that, they can stick or a pitcher or something like that. I think that'll definitely work for sure. Like what you're saying.
No, I agree with that. I think that's an interesting way to think of it. I think that's true. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. We don't need to talk much outfield today because I do think we're going to have other time to talk about the outfield. And even with all these depth adds, I still see the outfield as one place you could realistically see a free agent coming into play. I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's possible for sure. But unless you have anything else to add on the offensive side for now, we'll flip over to the pitching side.
Cool.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Getting into the pitching, Sean Newcomb comes over, and I was fired up, and you were able to cut up a great clip of this for the Future Sox page, because my last podcast with Dylan, this was the guy I've had on my mind for like a month of like, he should be the signing here. The White Sox were always going to sign a lefty. They were looking for a guy. It was clear that the ideal situation is someone who can give you length or leverage, right? Being able to bring in a lefty who can either give you some leverage innings in certain situations, or earlier in the season as prospects mature, can give you some length either as an opener or just a couple inning, multi-inning reliever, right? Having a left-handed, but you needed to add a lefty. There's only one, maybe two lefties who actually on the roster that factor into the bullpen mix. Mm-hmm. There was always going to be a lefty added. Ideally, someone who could give either length or leverage. And Newcomb just fits exactly what the White Sox have been targeting. This was a guy who I from the beginning of the offseason, I've said this was a good fit. And particularly on a one-year, $4.5 million deal, it makes a ton of sense. He fits the mold of what White Sox, you know, pitching brass has been targeting lately. It's three versatile fastballs. It's a funky breaking ball. And it's a low arm slot. That's exactly the archetype that White Sox, you know, pitching has been targeting. And I know you've got some notes on that, which I definitely want to get to, because it's fun. It's a weird arm. He had a really strong second half after going, you know, to Oakland, right? And or not Oakland, at the Athletics. I keep doing that, man. I've done that like the last three episodes.
I wrote that too. I was Oakland.
I really help it, but you know, it's fun. It's a four seam, a sinker, and a cutter that were all used 15%+ of the time. It's only 30% on the four seam, 22% on the sinker, 14% on the cutter. It's a funky, slurvy breaking ball at 22%, mixes in both a changeup and more of a true downer curveball. So it's 5+ pitches, potentially 6 pitch mix, 3 different fastball variations, 31 degree low arm slot for a lefty who made some spot starts last year, had some big high leverage innings last year, right? Like, he can do a little bit of everything. He had a good season. It's not some elite reliever by any means, but he fits exactly what the White Sox needed for this bullpen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a fantastic fit. I honestly thought that he was going to go more towards a contender, try to start somewhere maybe for a little bit more money. I honestly didn't think that he would choose here when you're just looking at all the list of free agents and all that stuff. Yeah. But I like what you're saying, just to reiterate it, like, I just think he fits so well into what you're trying to do. I think that early in the year, I think he can start and maybe 3 or 4 games in March and April before you bring up a guy like Tanner McDougal or Duncan Davitt or somebody like that. And then you can move him in the back end of the bullpen. Of course, like, that might not be the most ideal thing for an arm, and you might just want to stick him in the bullpen for the whole year and just see how that goes. But there's a lot of different things you can do. Something that I tweeted out alongside the clip of you and Dylan was that the slur was highlighted as one of the best pitches to left on the market. So 2800 RPM, 17 inches of horizontal break. He had almost half of his strikeouts were off the pitch, 32% whiff rate, 167 expected batting average. Like, it's honestly a ridiculous pitch. And then going into some of the other pitches, he had 4 of those main pitches, including the cutter, that were above 30% quality of pitches, just looking at some of the data. And his FIP was top 15 and minimum of 90 innings pitch. And so is his theory of skill interacted with it. So there's a lot of underlying numbers, to say the least, that would say that he's a pretty solid pitcher and that fits what you want to do. I think it's really interesting to see, like, a lot of what we were talking about a little bit before we started, some of these arm angles that they have on the 40-man roster, especially with the left-handed arms. Newcomb, Eicher, and Kay all throw from relatively the same arm slot. So it'll be really interesting to see, like, I think you can see Eicher come out of the bullpen a lot after a guy like Newcomb or Kay to try to see if they can, especially if they're shoving, to try to keep that same arm slot, to try to keep the eye level the same. And then you have guys like Gilbert or Hudson who may not make the roster, but those are definitely like your kind of lower arm slot kind of guys. And then you have a guy like Murphy, who you just got from the Red Sox, and he's a little bit above arm slot guy. So if you wanted to change it up, maybe, I think there's a lot of different things that you can do with the left-handed pitcher for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a great way. Some great perspective, some good numbers. As I've said before, Adrian's writing his Twitter as well. He's crushing it lately, so make sure you're keeping up with him on that front because he's up to date on the stuff. I know you guys are used to listening to me and Dylan and James and Ian, but Adrian's a big part of what we're doing here at Future Sox too. So just giving you your props there on that. But I think you're exactly right. It's a fun blend because you've got these weird arm slots. You've got a lot of low slots. The White Sox have targeted these guys. A lot of east to west guys too, right? Yep. You look at a guy like Newcomb, right? I mean, you've got a sinker that's going 17 arm side, a changeup that's going 12 arm side. You flip it over to the other side. You've got, you know, a pretty high rising four seam, right? That's on about 16 inches of vert from a low arm angle too. So that actually plays up even a little more than that 16 inches may indicate, right? Mm-hmm. The cutter is pretty straight, right? It doesn't have a ton of horizontal movement, right? It's a sharp cutter, but it still has some nice ride to it. Then you look at the slurve, like you said, it's a ton of spin and it's a ton of break. It's just flying off the table to his glove side, right? So it's just a really nice east to west profile, I think, of the pitch mix. And I think the White Sox see even more room to maximize. Like you mentioned, the underlying numbers last season were very strong. And obviously he was being used in a variety of roles. Most of the season he was more in mop-up roles or as an opener or just a little less prominent roles. I think the part of the reason he signs with the White Sox here is that it gives him a chance to be a highlighted arm in that bullpen, whether it be as an opener early in the season due to need or it be more in the, you know, later in back of the bullpen guy later in the season as we progress. I think that in general, Newcomb just gets the chance to be a key part of this bullpen. No matter how he's exactly used, he's going to be another Swiss Army in a way, almost like the opposite of Mike Vassell, I think, on the left-handed side. I think it's kind of a fun like pairing there where you've got a lefty and a righty who both can be spot starters, long relievers, leverage guys. And that gives you a really fun complexity to how you can kind of coordinate your bullpen when you've got two guys that both have kind of fit in that mold alongside your two high octane throw it, shove it fastball guys in Leisure and Taylor, right? So it's a pretty fun bullpen. I think it's coming together well. When you look at this bullpen, you take the Newcomb signing. I think that we have talked about this before, but I think you can pencil in, right? Jordan Leisure, Grant Taylor, Mike Vassell, obviously Sean Newcomb. You've got two Rule 5 guys in Alexander Alberto and Jedickson Paez who there's always a chance those types of guys get cut in spring training if they really struggle. I think both of them will have an inside track to at least making the roster, given that you took them in the Rule 5, you want to see what happens, right? That puts you at six guys in the bullpen potentially, assuming maybe one of those six is technically the fifth starter to start the year, but that's already six guys you have factored into the bullpen picture. Looking beyond that, who do you see beyond that group of six as the next kind of guys that could be locked in and claim a bullpen spot?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely interesting. I mean, you have to consider a guy like Wilkerman Gonzalez. I know he was hurt a little bit to end the year last year. I mean, there's a guy like Prelander Baroa, who we don't know what his health looks like, but can definitely come back up and reestablish himself in the bullpen. Kai Bush and Drew Thorpe isn't necessarily in the bullpen, but you have guys like that that'll come back up later in the year, especially on both sides. There's just a couple relievers, too. I mean, you don't know if Payne Paulette will come back to you. I know they didn't necessarily their indications didn't say that they loved him. You still have Tanner McDougall and Duncan Davitt maybe coming up later in the year. There's guys like Brian Hudson maybe who, if you wanted to, compete in the bullpen for that last sidearm lefty job, you could do that too. I do think it's really interesting as well. You mentioned there are a lot of different ways you can deploy this bullpen. You saw it last year with Will Venable. There are a lot of different ways. I mean, I remember Scott Merkin said to us, you thought Tyler Alexander was coming out every day in the second half of the year to come throw. So you really don't know when these guys are going to come out and how these games are going to unfold, especially with how long the regular season is. So it'll be really interesting to see how they sequence a lot of these guys together and who they cut and how spring training kind of checks out. I think spring training will be really interesting. They have basically – they'll have – if it's 13 guys, I feel like they're going to have 10 guys who can throw 4 to 6 innings and three guys who can shove the 100 heat or close to it and try to do that.
Yeah, 100%. We didn't even mention in that. I don't think either of us mentioned there Brandon Isert, Chris Murphy, who are both guys that I think are going to have a real shot. Two lefties, I think, are going to have both a real shot to make the roster as well. So while I think there's a world, there's another addition, I kind of think the pitching staff is set, to be honest. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm not mad about that. I think that the pitching staff is in a pretty good position where you feel you have a core nucleus of Leisure, Taylor, Vassell, and Newcomb, who are going to be your four probably highest leverage guys in the bullpen, I think, whether even if they're used in, you know, like we said, Vassell and Newcomb are going to be used in a unique type of way. Those are your four guys you're locked in, you trust out of your bullpen, I think. Beyond that, you've got the two Rule 5 guys. You've got Eisert, Murphy, Gonzalez, Gilbert, Baroa coming back off of TJ. That's a lot of pen arms, honestly. And as much as I think a couple of those guys probably could just be let go, that's still more than enough arms to get you through at least the first month or two of the season prior to some prospects being called up. On the rotation side, right, I think it's, you know, it's like we've talked about it. It's likely Smith, Martin, Kay, and Burke. I think the five starter is going to be either earned in spring training or just an opener, whether that opener is Newcomb, whether it's Murphy, whether it's Vassell. I think you can get by a month or two for sure, especially when there's more off days early in the season with an opener in that five spot, even if it's a different opener each time, or you just mess around with it, you play around with how you want to organize the bullpen. Maybe Jedickson Paez gets thrown into the fire and makes a couple opening. He's an opener for a couple. We heard that he's kind of profiled as a potential opener this season, even if they want to protect his usage a little bit. There's a lot of ways to go about it, but the more that I look at things after the Sean Newcomb signing, I kind of think the bullpen is pretty set for the start of the season.
It definitely let things fall into place with how many things that he can do. I think it kind of helped out align some of these roles for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the bullpen's pretty set. If there was to be one more add made, either on the starting side, the relieving side, just a pitcher in general, I definitely don't see more than one major league signing left on the pitching side of things. If there was to be one pitching signing still to be made, who are the names based on the current status that you kind of have your eye on a little bit? And I have a couple of mine too.
I guess a guy like Herman Marquez comes to mind. I think he'd be relatively cheap. Seeing some of the stuff just on Twitter, like his numbers away from Coors Field were pretty good last year. I think he really struggled there last year. Maybe a guy like Zach Littell makes some sense too. I saw him getting talked about. And maybe you just take a shot at one of these older guys too. Like, I feel really confident in the way that, I mean, you picked up Adrian Hauser last year and you ended up turning him into a trade chip. Like, I feel like you'll be able to mold one of these maybe older guys, journeymen that it can, are looking for a spot. And I feel really confident that you can mold it. Even going back to Newcomb for a second too, like, I think they may identify something they like in the pitch mix. We know that they like the sinker cutter and even the slurve. Like, I think if they can try to refine even the cutter, because Newcomb went away from the cutter a little bit. I just think that if they see a pitch that they can refine with one of these older guys too, like even maybe Jose Quintana comes back or Patrick Corbin. Like, I don't know, maybe one of these old on the older ends. But there's a couple of different names that, especially towards February, will be looking for landing spots, and you might be able to snag one of these guys, even like on a minor league deal. Maybe a reunion with Eric Fetty, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all very possible. I still lean more the reliever side. I think you could take a shot. I like the idea of a Marquez or some of those guys that, like, you see some untapped upside maybe, right? I think Griffin Canning's another one who could get a little bit outpriced maybe, but I like the profile and, like, what he could bring to the table. I think he's one of the only starters under 30 still on the market, actually. I think he's, like, the only starter under 30 on the market still. So I do think that's an interesting idea if you want to go for somebody who can slot into the rotation, at least to open the year. I still see a reliever being more likely, as much as we mentioned the reliever depth. And like I said, I kind of think they're done adding on the pitching side. But if there was to be an arm, a couple of the relievers that come to name for me just off the top, I think Danny Colombe, I've talked about all offseason, I still think is like the, you know, if you had Colombe and Newcomb both as the new lefties, I think that gives you a really good look against left-handed pitching or left-handed hitting, pardon me. I also think Andrew Chafin's another option on the lefty side that could make some sense there if you want to add another reliever. Jake Junis is an interesting one to me. I think Jake Junis is someone who also is another kind of guy who could spot start, right? I think he is more of a reliever at this point in his career, but I think he can spot start if you want him to potentially, and it gives you options to have a guy who has starting experience earlier in his career, had a pretty good season last year, generally limits walks, has a little bit of a, you know, it's another one of those low arm slot guys. Yeah, he's a righty, but it's a 28 degree arm slot, multiple fastball usage, right? It's heavy on the slider too. I think the Junis is a name that I've had my eye on a little bit. A couple other just various names to mention. If you want to go with a veteran who could just give you some innings out of the pen, I think like a Scott Barlow, a Hector Neris are two options that I looked at a little bit here. there's a lot of relievers still out there, and I think it's interesting to consider that you could take a swing on another one-year reliever and be okay with the fact that you do have options. Maybe Wilkerman Gonzalez, right? He's only 23 years old. Gonzalez might be best served with a couple months in AAA. Like, yeah, he looked decent last year, and he had some – there was some interesting stuff there. But maybe Gonzalez, you want to really just see what you can finalize and further develop with him in AAA. He has an option. Brandon Eichert has another option. If that's a guy who you want for depth, but you see another lefty on the free agent market being a little bit better of an option, Eichert can be your first lefty up from AAA midseason, right? Or, you know, a month into the season, whatever it may be, right? So there is options and ways to go about things if you want to add another reliever. And I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm not necessarily expecting one.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely want to lean more towards the veteran, maybe a little bit of the older side. Because just looking at just taking a quick look at the roster, this pitching staff doesn't have anybody over 32.
That's so crazy.
Not that that's necessarily a horrible thing, but I feel like maybe an Andrew Chafin could be a good addition just to anchor down the bullpen a little bit, kind of show people as then not that 32-year-olds don't know how major league stuff works, but maybe just having a guy like that, like you saw Michael A. Taylor probably helped out a ton. Like, we don't know exactly what necessarily he did throughout everything, but having a couple guys like that sprinkled out the roster I think would really help, especially if you're trying to be competitive, which I hope you are.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I actually don't think there's anybody on the roster over 32 right now. Which is crazy. I'm looking at the hitting side now too. Benintendi 31, Derek Hill's 30. Newcomb and Tyler Gilbert are both 32. There's nobody on the major league roster over 32 right now.
Yeah, Newcomb's your oldest player.
Yeah, Newcomb's your oldest player at 32 and 5 months, which is wild. That's a little perspective there. That's a fun tidbit that I might have to tweet out after this, because that's crazy. You just pulled that. I mean, we should rip that one. That's pretty wild. That there's no player over 32 on the White Sox roster. Now that we talk about that, and we both just figured this out in live time, I think that if you're going to add any more pitchers, it should be one of those experienced Chafin, Coulombe, that kind of category of older, experienced veteran pitchers. I think that would make some sense, actually. It just has to be the right guy, and it has to probably be a one-year deal. I don't think you're seeing any more than a one-year deal. And I also think it would probably be I don't think the Sox go beyond $4 to $5 million for another pitcher if they're going to add another pitcher to the mix. I think Newcomb was probably the last highest spent, for agent. Right?
Justin Wilson seems – I'm just
– Another one, another one, too.
They like Boston Red Sox lefties, too. So they could – or just pitchers in general. So, I mean, they could go after him. I don't know how much he would go for on the market. Maybe probably somewhere similar to Newcomb.
Probably about three mil, I guess.
That would be another interesting add, too. Maybe, somebody like him or Chafin would make a lot of sense just to add a veteran presence to the bullpen. I mean, honestly, I would feel like you would try to add one on the offensive side too, just one on the offensive side, trying to get an anchor a little bit older, not maybe somebody that starts every day, but maybe if you're looking for that fourth outfielder, like the Mike Tauchman type or whatever it is, I think they might need a little bit of a veteran presence on both sides of the ball in that look.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting note there that we just pulled up there. So I think that's kind of wraps our talking on the pitching side. I think that we both agree that, generally speaking, there's at most one ad left. And if it is an ad, it's probably one of those veteran guys, either to be a five starter or more likely to be another bullpen anchor potentially. But I think that following the Newcomb signing, I think the pitching's in a pretty good spot. Yeah, it's not going to be one of the, it's going to be a pitching staff that ranks in the bottom 10 of baseball, probably at least at the onset of the season. But there's some pieces in place, and there's a lot of young guys on the way. That's what you got to remember with this pitching staff. And we're going to talk, obviously, getting to the 26, we're going to get back into our prospect focus more and more. But there's a lot of arms that will come up throughout the year. As we mentioned, Baroa, Thorpe, and Bush all coming back from TJ, right? Mason Adams coming back from TJ as well, who hasn't made his debut yet, but still a guy who figures to be in the mix next year. Then you add in McDougal, Schultz, and Hagen, who are all going to probably debut in 2026, right? So there's a lot of arms on the way, and that's why I think they're probably good where they are, because of how many guys are on the way. Then again, never hurts to add too much pitching. We saw last spring training, four guys went down with Tommy John, and we were like, oh, crap, these are four guys that were going to be in 2025 roster, and they all go down with TJ, right?
Can absolutely never have enough. I think that if they can on the offensive side, how they kind of had the jump, especially in the second half, calling up all those kind of guys. I think if they can have that same sort of boost on the pitching side, I think it's really going to help and benefit them. Like, even with the Murakami signing, I did a whole piece on power bats who I want to add. And my main point was, you got to add 20 homers to this lineup if you want to be somewhere in the top half. And they did that. So, I mean, we'll hope they can do that on the pitching side as well.
Yeah, 100%. That sounds great. It's big time. It's exciting. The last thing we'll wrap on here before we call it a day and get to our New Year's Eve almost. Happy New Year's to everyone that's listening to this following the New Year or right before the New Year. Luis Robert. And we'll keep this simple because I don't want to dive into it too much. I feel like I'm honestly a little bit tired of the amount of rumors and the conversations and the dialogue around Robert. I don't think a trade's happening. I really don't. We've heard a lot of rumors this past week, and I want you to touch on some of those there. But like, I just don't really see it. I think right now, no matter what, the White Sox are selling so much lower than they want to be selling on Luis Robert. And I think that the expectation of what they're getting in return for him is just not realistic for where the market's at right now, which leads to a situation where you get to the deadline, you get what you get, and you call it a day. I really just don't see any other outcome at this point. It's possible a trade happens here in the next month or two, and I eat my words, and that's very plausible. If it does happen in the next month or two, I think fans will be disappointed by what the return is, because I don't think the return that people want is out there right now. And that leads me to think that it's going to just be roll with Robert till the deadline and then get what you get.
Yeah, the Reds, I guess, seem the most imminent. And then after signing JJ Bleda and then trading for Dane Meyers, it kind of takes them out of that for sure. You've seen some other teams mentioned too, somebody like the Mets or the Padres or the Pirates. I think the Mets probably profile is the best fit rather than the Pirates or the Padres. I really don't see how they would fit there and like what they would give up. I just think that if the Mets maybe blow you out of the water, they're probably the only team in a position to blow you out of the water for them. I think that the Mets will probably go after other options until then. That'll probably be a later add or a later trade to say if it were going to happen. But yeah, I'm more in your boat too. I think they're going to wait until the deadline because I think that they have a pretty firm asking price of whatever that is. And I don't think they're going to get it, to be honest with you. I just think that their value of what he is, and they've tried to trade him for almost 3 years now, I think that they're still holding on to what his value was and not what it is. But on the brighter side, I guess, of that, and not to be so overall negative, you're making a move with Murakami that you can, I would hope you're trying to be competitive. You know what I mean? I don't feel like the move makes a lot of sense if you're not trying to be competitive, if you're just adding a guy to replace another guy. So I would think, from my point of view, I would think that you can see what you have until the deadline. I'm not saying that you're going to be so many games over 500 or something like that, but I do think it benefits you to see what you have with some of these young guys. You can see what comes up and see where you are. If I don't really think the deal changes much in the next couple months, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think much changes. I think that you hold Robert, you go into the season with Robert on your roster. Ideally, come the deadline, Brandon Montgomery's ready to go. Robert is traded. He has a decent first half. You're able to trade him for some value, and you move on from there. You've got Braden in the outfield fold. The biggest question now moving forward, and we focus on infield and bullpen today, which, as we should, because that was the recent moves, right? The biggest question is where the other future outfielders come from. And I don't know the answer to that. We're going to have to figure that out, whether it's guys that move to the outfield positionally. We mentioned before we recorded about a Caleb Bonimer potentially shifting into a corner outfield spot eventually, given the fact that the first pick is in hand. Colson Montgomery looks like a legit left side of the infield guy, right? There's going to be some interesting dynamics to consider. You got to figure out who that next one or two outfielders of that future core are going to be. So that's going to be really interesting to see. I don't think it's Luis Robert. I don't think it's Andrew Benintendi, right? So looking at beyond 2027, who are the outfielders along with Brandon Montgomery that become part of the future? I think Brooks Baldwin's going to get every chance this season to earn a future spot. Still probably profiles best as a fourth outfield utility, can play some infield type of role, right? But I don't know who the future outfielders are yet. I think it's going to be something we're going to be very closely watching this season and the farm system and within the organization as a whole of who becomes those future outfield cornerstones alongside Brandon Montgomery.
No, 100%. I think I mentioned a little bit earlier in the podcast too. I think they're going after a lot of Mike Tauchman lights, I guess, with Tristan Peters and Dustin Harris. I think that the AAA outfield at least will look pretty interesting. And I think you're going to see a lot of, at least like you saw guys like Corey Jolks pop off in AAA last year and then never get really a call up. I think that you're going to see probably a heavy churn at least between one of the outfield spots between, of course, I would love to add an outfielder, but I think it's going to be a heavy rotation between those two guys, maybe a Derek Hill, an Everson Pereira, like that sort of thing. Cause I don't think that Benintendi is going to see a lot of time in the outfield. And then especially if you trade a guy like Robert, maybe you get an outfielder in return, I would think. I don't know. Like it's just really interesting to see how that all would shake out. I mean, you could end up moving, like what you said, moving Caleb Onward in an outfield spot, Sam Antonacci in an outfield spot, and have Braden in center field if that's what your plan is. But honestly, like that stuff is more down the road on like to the end. It'll be interesting to see how they deploy the outfield in spring training too, like to see how the combinations go outside of Luis Robert.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be very fascinating to follow. This was great, Adrian. Thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it. Everyone, again, make sure you're checking out Adrian. He's crushing it on the White Sox world at Adrian White Sox on X, futuresox.net. He's been writing. Also going to be doing some writing in the near future for Just Baseball. I'm at Elijah EV8. Obviously, keep up with everything we're doing at Future Sox. We're excited for 2026. This has been really cool. Obviously, we are now part of the Just Baseball Media Network, which has been really cool for me and for all of us. I think we're starting to continue to build out the operation. Of what Future Sox is doing and just trying to cover an improving White Sox organization and the future of the organization. We're going to be covering it every step of the way. Happy New Year's to everyone. Stick with us for 2026, and that'll do it for the round.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.